Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of Warrior Connection. Well, you know, as the theme song says, a little bit of respect. Well, we sure wish the VA would give veterans all the respect they need, but as all the information that's been coming out day after day and year after year proves, we got a significant, real serious problem, and we need to start addressing it. We've talked about it on this show a lot. We've done a lot. Denise Nichols, Dave, all these guys have gone to Washington. Patricia Axelrod has done a lot of work. And let's talk about it tonight. Let's talk about what's happening and where we need to go. Denise, are you there?
I am here, and I'm hoping my other vets that went to D.C. call in. I called and notified them to do that.
That would be good. The more we get on, the happier. Patricia, are you there?
I'm here, dear. Let me wish everyone Happy Mother's Day to all the good mothers. Denise, Happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day to everybody else out there, too.
Yeah, right. Denise, your daughter's at law school, right, in Washington, right?
Yep, just finished the last of, year two. So she's going for her third year.
Wow. Nice. It only seems like yesterday she was a babe in arms.
Yeah, when I came home from the war, she was just 4 years old, and as I was talking to another mother veteran online this past week, is, you know, I felt guilt because very suddenly after I came home, I knew we had problems, started taking phone calls all hours of the day and night on veterans before we had Facebook and ways to contact each other more directly. And then I started my trip to D.C. So I went through a lot. My daughter went through a lot with, Mom, the war is over. No, the war after the war is even more important to get the message through that you don't leave the veterans out there suffering.
Well, you know, the veterans have been suffering and left and abandoned. I know when I was growing up, my dad was involved with the Spanish-American War veterans. They were still around. And we definitely had all the World War I vets. I remember them totally telling all the stories and getting dressed up in the uniforms. And then, obviously, our parents were in the World War II thing. And then our cousins and even other family members, uncles and a whole bunch of them were in Korea. And then the three of us, obviously, we got stuck in Vietnam. And our family members got stuck in Vietnam. And then next thing we know, we got Desert Storm and all the stuff in between. And now our Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom. And it never seems to end. The veteran is abandoned.
It's a tradition, unfortunately. The soldier is expendable. That's the bottom line. They take better care. When I say they, I'm talking about the Department of Defense, and takes better care of its equipment and its materiel than it does its soldiers. Soldiers have always been expendable.
They've been expendable forever. Denise, you and I were both on flying status in the Air Force, all right?
Doug, before we go longer, I want to know if any of our vets have called in. If you've called in to the show, please speak up.
I'm here, Denise.
Oh.
Mike Jarrett.
Okay, Mike, introduce yourself and tell us about what you accomplished by going to D.C.
Well, I went to D.C. to basically advocate for other Gulf War veterans. And I discussed my own case. I don't feel like the VA has done a very good job as far as caring for us.
Mike, you were in Desert Storm? Were you in Desert Storm?
Yes.
And what was your MOS? What did you do over there?
I was transportation. I ran watercraft.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you were exposed to a number of toxic agents. Is that correct?
Hello, I just wanted to introduce myself. Steve Holman from North Carolina, a Gulf War veteran that hit the hill recently.
Got two of you online now. We got Mike and Steve. Anybody else? Did Glenn call in?
Okay. Good for you. So you, Mike, you have been battling for care for yourself and for others for a very long time. Now, you have some degree of service-connected disability?
Right now, I'm 60%.
Mm-hmm. And do you consider yourself to be wholly disabled? Do you believe you should have more service-connected disability? Have you got another claim pending?
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. How long did it take you to get 60%?
Just got it. Been working on it since 1997.
Mm-hmm. And have you got the classic symptoms and syndromes of what's called the Persian Gulf War illness or Desert Storm Syndrome?
Yes, I do. I've got all of them. I've got the, most all of them. I've got the digestive issues, the irritable bowel syndrome. I've got hiatal hernia, the acid reflux. I've got urological symptoms that, according to my doctor, mimics multiple sclerosis. I've got the joint pain, the muscle pain, the chronic fatigue, and most recently the skin rashes and apathy of the frontal lobes in the brain.
Mm-hmm. And when you were over there, did you hear do you believe you were exposed to chemical warfare agents as well as radioactive weaponry?
The chemical weapons, most definitely, they're radioactive. I can't say that for sure. But I know when I got there in early August, I was support. And we got there before, early August, and we stayed until the following August when everything was shipped back to the States.
So you went over there during Desert Shield?
Yes, Desert Shield, Desert Storm, and Desert Farewell.
So you got the, Mike, did you, then were you transportation, were you hauling all the equipment back and forth all over the theater then?
Yes, air job, when we got there was basically to offload the combat power that arrived by ship. And of course, get that equipment to the shore, in the ready to fight configuration. I worked for General Pergolis there for a while, so I was traveling throughout Saudi, making sure that the combat units were supplied with everything they need.
So you were working under COSCOM with Transpo, correct?
At first, for a few months, uh-huh. Yes.
Uh-huh. And the other gentleman that's on, what is your name, sir?
Steve Holman.
Hey, Steve, how are you? Tell us a little bit about your experience, but Mike, let me ask you something. How long did it generally take you to be seen by a doctor? And you made what was the period of time, wait time, between the time that you wanted to see a doctor and the time that you got to see a doctor? It took you all of this time, 20-odd years, to get 60%.
Well,
how much of that delay is involved actually waiting to see doctors?
A lot of it. I just transferred from one VA medical center to another VA medical center. When I first started going in, they would see me quite regularly. But as time went on, they said to me, we don't know what's wrong with you. There's nothing we can really do for you. And I get my annual appointments. And I went in about a year ago, and the one doctor I saw, she was a contract doctor. She felt that I needed to be seen more often than once a year, and she set me up for 6 months appointment. And what was happening, right before the six-month appointment, you would get a phone call wanting to reschedule the appointment for 3 months down the road.
And so, where was that now, Mike? Which VA was that?
That was the Martinsburg VAMC. It fell under one of their community CBOX.
So you were actually scheduled, you saw a doctor once a year, and just before that appointment would come up, you'd get a call, and they'd delay that for another 3 months. Is that right?
Yes, that's what they wanted to do, and I got tired of that, so I transferred to the Selim VA Medical Center in Roanoke, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And right now I'm being seen every 3 months.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
But you're a whole lot better.
Steve, about yourself there. Steve, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
Fill us in, Steve, what your experiences are.
Steve, tell us about tell us about your illness, and have you got service-connected disability?
Yes, I have service-connected disability. It was a fight, though. I was actually in 1998. The second drawdown after the Gulf War.
Mm-hmm.
they told me that I was either going to get med boarded or I should take the early release so that I at least have some money to start my family over again.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had three small children and a wife.
How old are you, Steve?
I am 47.
Mm-hmm. And what's your degree of service-connected disability?
It is 90% connected, but it's IU. I cannot work anymore. I've been fired mm-hmm. from so many jobs because of my illnesses that they actually gave me individual unemployability.
And what mm-hmm. did you do, Steve, in the Army?
I was with when I went over, I was with Bravo Company 782nd Maintenance Battalion. I was an electronic technician that worked on anything electronic, period. You know, whether mm-hmm. it be the radios or power supplies or, you know, even the NBC detectors.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
Our company was actually attached to what's called a forward area support team, which supported the 505th Infantry Brigade of the 82nd Airborne Division.
So you went right up through the center. You went all the way up in the center into Iraq.
Forward.
So go on, Steve. What were you saying?
Steve,
said we were in
the
rear,
center
we were
Iraq
forward.
Then?
Every time that 3rd Brigade went somewhere, we were with them.
Mm-hmm. What year were you in, Steve?
I was in from 85 to 98.
So both of you are Desert Storm veterans.
Yes, and I have a couple conflicts.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve just got back from a war-related illness center in D.C. He went up to the Hill with us to the Research Advisory Committee meeting, and then went up to the Hill and then got an appointment to go through the war-related illness center in D.C.
Oh, that was fun.
Do you think did they assist you? Did they help you, Steve?
When I got in there, the one gentleman that was helpful was basically somebody's assistant. He was listening and was willing to accept outside information. The doctor he works for believes that the Research Advisory Committee is actually trying to take his job and mm-hmm. that he knows what's best for us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I said, well, yeah, I may have this symptom or whatever that you want to call it, but what's the underlying cause, and is it because of X, Y, and Z? Myself, my additional job was also field sanitation, so I would have to set up, you know, where does the kitchen go, where does the toilets go, where does the garbage go, and then have to burn all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. You got into everything because the crap was coming down into all of that stuff in addition mm-hmm. to it. And
I actually, the first night that the Scuds actually were shot off, I called the first one in to our battalion headquarters, and I guess it was relayed back. And that's mm-hmm. when you could see the Scuds being locked in by the Patriots and then blown directly overhead, and we had to be in MOP.
Mm-hmm.
MOP 4 for a couple of days.
How long did it take you to get your disability, Steve?
I educated myself before I got out so I could fight the system. And I actually almost passed away a couple times from unknown illnesses. So my records were 3 volumes thick.
Mm-hmm.
So I got disability of 60% initially.
Mm-hmm.
And then as things progressively got worse, you know, when you're on active duty, you're fine, but a year out, you're going to start deteriorating, and then it keeps going thereafter, harder mm-hmm. and faster, because you're mm-hmm. no longer doing what you used to do, and your body's now, like, trying to compensate.
What mm-hmm. did you, Steve, what did you find out, you know, you're on active duty, they put you on profile, and then they start talking about medical evaluation board.
Oh, I was not good enough to stay in, and I was on profile, but they kept me and in the field doing work for them till 7 days before I'm actually supposed to have been released from the Army, and then told me to get out and get my family off the installation.
Mm-hmm.
So they give
with
you an early...
With 3 small kids and stuff like that, you know, you got 7 days, clear the whole installation, find a place to live, so on and so forth, find a job, and get out of here.
Let me, if I can now, Doug, as we just heard these...
Pat, before you proceed, let's see if Peter or Glenn have called in. Is Peter online? Peter Green or Glenn Stewart? Okay, go ahead.
Apparently not. Let me, you know, now that we've heard these two good men tell their stories, for the benefit of anyone who's not heard about this.
I was actually stationed just down from, in Iraq, from Kismia, where they blew up the bunkers and took in actual live ammo into our BSA.
Yeah, Hemisphere.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, I don't know if you folks have heard about this, and I would bet you have, but for the benefit of people who haven't heard about the scandal, a recent scandal, a new scandal involving the Phoenix VA, it has recently been learned that the Phoenix VA has been manipulating appointments for veterans and denying veterans timely care, but in fact misreporting this information to Washington D.C. so that they had two lists going on.
That's
one
right.
was a quote secret list, and this was a list of veterans who were not seeing doctors, who were seeing doctors perhaps once a year, like Mike. And that list was kept secretly, but this Phoenix VA was keeping a second list. And this was a falsified list. This was a fraudulent list showing that veterans were seeing doctors far more frequently than they were, and misrepresenting the numbers of times that veterans were seeing doctors. Now, this has created quite a stir, and the head of the VA, the Phoenix VA, has just been put on leave, and the DOD IG, the Department of Defense IG, has been called upon to investigate this matter. I bring this up for the benefit of those who are not wholly familiar with the level of care that veterans receive. This is something that's quite common for veterans, as Mike attested to the fact that he was seeing a doctor once a year. He saw a doctor once a year, and that once that year appointment came up, it was delayed another 3 months. But Mike, I can tell you that what they were doing more than likely was misrepresenting that information.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. I know when I first started going to the VA, it seemed like, I was being seen quite regular on a, but as time went by, I guess, when you go in and you say, well, I'm sick, I think I have gallbladder illness, I have this symptom, this symptom, this symptom, this symptom. And unfortunately, we don't fit into the your normal profile, so to speak. And I think my case, there were some very good doctors who were trying to help me, but I think a lot of them just got frustrated. They did not know what to do. I don't think that they had proper guidance from above as far as Gulf War illness. My last appointment, I'll give you a prime example. I've got a very good primary care physician now, but the day I went in, she was behind, and I sat there, and I know she's seen a World War II veteran, she's seen a Korean veteran, a Vietnam veteran, and myself. Now, unless the VA has effective training, there's no way this one primary care doctor can know all the specific problems that each era of veterans has, especially the Vietnam with the Agent Orange and us with the Gulf War.
Well, Mike, I think that you're a good-hearted person and you're prepared to give this doctor the benefit of the doubt. But let me tell you something. I've been a veteran representative, a veteran advocate for many years, dear, and I wrote a paper in 1996 which was solicited by the National Institute of Health, called a profile and a protocol of the chemically injured Desert Storm soldier or veteran.
Right.
And it essentially laid out all that that you have experienced, all of the symptomology. These doctors are intentionally turning a blind eye because they're not given the guidance from above. As a matter of fact, they're told to ignore the symptomology.
And I don't know if it's told the guidance, but I don't believe the dissemination of the information that is given to the VA at the highest levels, i.e. at the RAC conferences, is actually disseminating down to the doctors. I know it's not getting out to the Persian Gulf veterans. I did not know about the RAC until this year.
One of the problems that we brought up in the last RAC meeting, now, Steve just said he got an appointment at the War-Related Illness and Injury Studies Center.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I requested an appointment last September, 9 months ago in Brighton. I still have not received that yet. And the problem, from what I understand, is one VA facility can't communicate with the other VA facility.
That is correct. And they have to get the IT personnel down there to be able to interface, to be able to get the stuff to go up to the RISC. And then once the RISC information is sent to them, they have to call to ensure that they actually got the information.
Yeah, you requested it, but did your doctor request it, dear? Did your doctor support it, Mike?
Yes, she has. She just, my understanding is they got to get some IT people to come down and do something to the computers. I mean, I don't know, but all I know is I haven't got that appointment yet. In my case,
also,
I don't think it's
just not only affects Gulf War veterans, but it affects other veterans of different eras. You know, we're not the only ones, but this is our special topic. You know, I have a next-door neighbor that's a Marine who served down there at Camp Lejeune with that dirty water and stuff, and now is having heart problems, and they want to deny him.
You know, the bottom line
is waiting for follow-up, and they found something wrong with her on the mammogram. She has to wait till June.
Mm-hmm.
So what is with that? You know, if it's cancer, why don't we follow up with it? Why are we not addressing the stuff with Camp Lejeune better and everything else like that?
You know, Camp Lejeune is not the only base that's got the incredible trichloroethylene contamination. Right here where I live in Rantoul, Illinois, the former Chinook Air Force Base, the trichloroethylene is all the way down in Wisconsin on the aquifer. It's off the base. Water wells are contaminated. And just like every place else, the EPA and the Air Force are denying any correlation between that and the health problems, or even denying the fact that it's there. But the same thing with Agent Orange. So
the bottom line here is that the Department of Defense, something I'd rather call the Department of Death rather than Department of Defense, to be candid with you, does not factor in the cost of veteran care and health care as they contemplate war, and neither does Congress, for that matter.
Yes.
Now, we are, you know, the VA has requested $68.4 billion for health care for veterans. They call that discretionary spending. Get this straight now. The total budget for the VA is $163.9 billion. $68.4 billion goes to health care, and that's called discretionary spending, not mandatory spending.
Right.
Discretionary spending.
I heard about this while I was in the RISC, that the research is actually on one line, and I was wondering, why is it that 501(c)s must make a separate line? If somebody gives money, i.e. Congress, to a specific research, that they don't make a new line and spend it only on that research, like a 501(c) would have to do if, say, Joe Blow gave me $1,000 to spend on just veterans services.
Well, that would be, you know, that's correct. In the research is under discretionary spending. But my point for emphasizing this is this. $95.6 billion of the $163 is mandatory. That means that it must be spent. And mandatory spending goes for disability compensation and pensions. Now, the $68.4 billion is discretionary. This means that they are not even obligated. It is not a mandate to provide adequate health care for the veterans. And I know the way that these VAs operate. I know full well that the administrators, the head of the hospitals, are in control of their own budgets. They allocate the money as they see fit. There's so much money that's allocated to each and every one of these VAs, and that money which does not get spent out of the yearly allotment is divided up into perks for the administrators. That's the truth.
I don't think
that is
comparison.
True. You know, what they're finding out with the Arizona one is that directors and other high officials were actually rather let people die off than say, you know, hey, we
That's
got
right.
this big backlog so they can keep their bonuses every year.
Well,
That's
I know.
Correct.
Well,
That's correct.
When I first started going to the VA, I wasn't going because I was even thinking of a claim or anything like that. At that point, I was simply trying to keep a job. And some of the statements, I mean, I actually felt ashamed to say I'm a Gulf War veteran. Because the treatment you got was like, it's in your mind, there's nothing wrong with you. And I read something. This comes right out of my medical records. He seems to simply have a propensity for developing such pain.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I cannot say it's classic fibromyalgia, although I do find similar complaints among my fibromyalgia patients. Possible somatic disorder. In other words, I'm crazy.
You know, mm-hmm. I think what we need to come down to something. This, I'm going back to Desert Storm from the command staff work that we did. And, Denise, you were seeing a lot of these same things. We're seeing the medical problems develop rapidly right there at the beginning without any what we'll call wounded in action. In other words, so many casualties, proportions of casualties we've had, they were becoming because getting sick and ill from all the toxic exposures, it was overwhelming the number of people that we actually had wounded in action or killed in action. And the wounded, less the actual casualties we had during Desert Storm proper were less than 1,000. And the majority of killed in action and those wounded in action were friendly fire from depleted uranium. Because we had to clean that all up afterwards, and that got our whole team trashed. And so we had that. But now, out of 600 and some odd thousand people that went to Desert Storm, we know over 100,000 are dead. I've had members of my team continually die right off, continuously year after year. And then we know that the remainder of them, we got over 300,000 that have applied for disability. That was in the VA Grievous Reports back in 08. So it's just an incredible problem. And I don't know, Denise, you guys were seeing all these health problems from toxic exposures right away, weren't you?
Pretty well. I think we, you know, pretty well we had a mission to do. So, you know, you kind of ignored your personal symptoms and you went on with your mission. And a lot of people didn't get it documented in theater and, you know, had to wait until the VA got a registry. And then after you had the registry exam, they never called you back.
Well, the problem for those who did get it documented,
another way.
One of the biggest problems was a lot of those medical records were not brought back from theater.
We know the records. Nor the shot that we got disappeared. They wouldn't put it in a record, but it was put into a supply book.
We know the records disappeared out of the Connex when it was shipped back from 3rd MedCom.
Right.
That's been confirmed. I mean, Andres Carnegie Bob and Tom Little, Ulrich Bauer, when they went to get the medical records from the theater staff, they found out they were all missing. I mean, Denise, you've heard them talk about that how many times?
They disappeared. Not only did the medical records disappear, the NBC records disappeared, The CW records, the chemical warfare attack records disappeared. From the very beginning, they plotted, they planned. This all began right smack on the front. To cover this up, it was never intended to take care. They knew full well that they were going to be dealing with extraordinary emergency medical expenses. From the very beginning, they knew that. That's
right.
Why these records started disappearing.
It was a cover-up in theater. Every time I read a report about something that happened, it's all a cover-up. I mean, you take the scud that hit the quartermaster unit. I was there that night. I know what happened. But if you read the official reports, you know, there was a glitch in the Patriot system, and one Patriot battery was down for maintenance. The other Patriot battery had a glitch in the system. And the truth is, if a scud missile was headed out to sea, they didn't waste $1 million Patriot missile.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, this one broke up right over the port of Dahran, and the warhead just happened to land on the quartermaster unit.
Patricia, didn't you do the work on Scud missiles and Patriot missiles?
I did some work on Patriot missiles. My background is as a military scientist, and I know you folks remember when the Patriot missiles were accidentally firing. Do you recall all of that? I did some work on those Patriot missiles to address that. The bottom line, I might add, was that they were not sufficiently hardened against stray RF. So, yes, I did, but with all of that said, I guess the point that I really want to make clear is that, in my estimation, we hear one excuse after the other. We hear, in fact, that the records are so voluminous that they're up to the ceiling, and that they can't handle the medical records. We hear that they've had glitches in their computer systems, and now we're hearing we hear this coming out of Arizona. I might add, RAND did a study in 2014 that was just released as well. They found, in interviewing their doctors in Nebraska, that 96% of the doctors in Nebraska said that they were not able to get adequate scheduling for their patients. That their patients were becoming sicker because of the scheduling. This is all very well known. And the bottom line is that the VA is broken. We do not have the money. There is not sufficient money allocated for the VA. That's the bottom line. And it is cheaper, I'm so sorry to say this, it is cheaper to allow a veteran to die than to take care of them. That's what's going on.
Let me bring the discussion to the current time. We have a research advisory committee for Gulf War illness. We fought for this bill to get it in 1998. We got it started in 2002. They have been doing an excellent job of reviewing all federal research. What has happened with the latest RAC was that the change in the charter changed the point of having the VA research included in the report, the first big report since 08. So the other thing is they're trying to kill that committee. They've already replaced six of the committee members, and they are replacing the others by September 30th. Unless we get this bill, H.R. 4261, passed in the House, we get a mirror bill in the Senate to get it through the Senate in a timely manner, and we need all this done by September the 15th before they pink slip the rest of them.
I've been engaged and involved in that research from the very beginning.
But let me tell you, Pat.
Well, that research is very important
that
to us.
Name all members
it's very important,
committee.
But let me just say this about that. They're using that research as a means and ways of stalling treatment.
Well, they're going to kill it totally, because if the VA can appoint all 12 members of a committee, that is not an adequate independent committee. And that
but
is
the
what
research, my dear, has got nothing to do with the treatment. The fact of the matter is that what we need to be doing is treating, and they
and
are
exactly.
using that research as a way of stating...
Treatment research is being proposed and being accepted at the CDMRP Gulf War Illness Research Program. There is no known accepted treatment that they can offer us. And
that's not
the
true, Denise. They can treat the individual symptoms.
Well,
I work with
they
veterans.
They can treat the symptoms, but here, to
I
me,
work
this
with,
is
let me say something about this. I work with veterans every day, one-on-one. What I, the way that I work with veterans is this way. I will have, when a veteran contacts me, I have them send me their records. I analyze their records to see what ICD-9 codes have been applied towards their service-connected disability. I see what diagnostic protocol has been applied to the veteran. What types of testing have they had? What I'm telling you is this. There is a means and a way of treating every symptom. Those symptoms have to be treated. If they're not treated, then we lose our soldiers. That's what's happening.
Well, that's true. I go to a personal doctor.
Excuse me, wait a minute. Need detoxification. They have funded that, and they're asking for veterans to come to them for 6 weeks of detoxification, and a supplement will be used. That was brought to us in 99. We finally got him to put in a proposal to fund it. It's funded. It's on the road now. It's there for veterans to take part in for 6 weeks. They'll make the full report.
Well, that's a very small number of veterans, dear. What I'm telling you is this. Yes, veterans need to be detoxified because all of these toxins store in their fat cells and in their brains. In the liver.
But the fact of the matter is that
if you're, the rashes, for instance, Mike, that you're getting, that is a sign of toxicity. That is your body trying to deal with the toxins. And the bottom line is that every individual symptom must be treated. It has to be treated. Otherwise, if it's not treated, the organic cause of that symptomology is only going to get worse.
Let's look at
that. That's true. I don't agree. I do not disagree with you. I agree with you wholeheartedly. But I think the point that we was trying to make of the research, the reason the research is so important, just the way the VA claim process is, without the research, there are no presumptive illnesses. The veterans aren't getting... I mean, there are so many veterans that are sick and can't work, that don't have food on their table. I just went and bought one Gulf War veteran. I didn't have much money, but I bought him $150 worth of groceries last week. Because here this man is out of work. His family don't even have food on the table. Well, he waits on the claim.
Mm-hmm.
And the other important thing about this research, in my opinion, is right now we're not just talking Gulf War vets. Right now, we're talking over 600,000 veterans are sick from the Middle East. And this includes the first Gulf War, Desert Shield, Desert Storm, the Iraqi Freedom, and Afghanistan.
Okay, guys.
I won't belabor it. This research, these findings were developed years and years and years ago. I told you I did something in 1996. In 1992, I did a study with the NIH enumerating the various factors contributing to what was then called Desert Storm Syndrome.
Right.
And putting in all of the symptomology. And you know what I used? I used the NIH database and the National Technical Informational Services database. I used their own database. All of those findings were there in 1992.
Well, how do we get the Department of Defense to pay attention to this? Because
I mean,
they can't. They will not pay attention to it because it is like the whole thing with Agent Orange. The fact of the matter is that veterans have to stand up. They've got to march on Washington, for God bloody sakes.
Right.
But unfortunately, veterans are uniquely passive.
At the headquarters.
I beg your pardon?
We did stand in front of the VA at the headquarters with our signs demanding that that we be for research and for to heal us.
Let's look at the ICD-9 codes that we have information on for a moment. Just go through these. Just everybody listen for a moment. Okay. When we're broken down in Desert Storm or Operation Iraqi Freedom, Enduring Freedom, all of these, the statistics are coming out the same as far as diagnoses. We're looking at 15% infectious and parasitic diseases. We got right at 2% malignant cancers. We got about 6% benign cancers. Endocrine, nutritional, metabolic, we're looking at 31%. Leukemias, we're looking at 4%. I mean, I've come back on with soldiers coming back out of Iraq where they had leukemia and the problems with that. We got the stuff, we got the mental disorders, PTSD, that's well over 50%. We look at the neurological, and all of us have got neurological sensory
right.
system problems. That's we're looking at 44%. We look at the cardiac. Denise, you've been a yeller and a screamer on the cardiac. That's at 21 to 22%. And these kids are coming back with such horrible problems. You did the research, Denise, I think, on the coagulation, and it's showing up why we're seeing the cardiac problems. Digestive problems, close to 36%. The junior unitary, you know, all this stuff, again, that's at 15%. The rash is at 21%. The muscular skeletal system, connective tissue. I mean, all of us, you got the spinal injuries. We got all this stuff, ongoing problems. That's at 56%. And we got ill-defined symptoms and medical problems at 51%. Injuries and poisoning at 29%. And we're talking about hundreds of thousands. So when we look at Desert Storm, we know from the VA's own data, well over 100,000 have applied for disability that served in Desert Storm. We know for OIF, OEF, we're looking at probably 1.5 million have doing it. We got a backlog, incredible backlog, whether they're Vietnam vets or Desert Storm or Operation Iraqi Freedom, trying to get their claims through. I've got one claim that's been there for 4 years, like what happened to it, okay? So, I mean, we're seeing the same medical problems all the way through. And this was not bullets or bombs. This was complex toxic exposures.
Right.
And why? And then, you know, no matter what you do, it seems like what we're seeing over and over again, and this is the same
thing.
Bless you. They said that they've been clearing out the backlogs. Well, what it showed up here in the latest report that came out in today's newspaper is the actual backlog. The proportion and number of people that they disavowed the claim or did not give a service connection to in proportion to the people they awarded was almost the same. It's kind of like, no wonder you could clear the backlog. All these guys are sick, and you're denying any correlation. I mean, it's deliberate and intentional.
I'm telling you, it's just strictly about money. Let me point out, follow the money. The bottom line is they don't want to spend the money. Let me, if I might, point out something to you, and this will sicken you as it sickens me. Again, as we speak of that which is called discretionary, again, $64 billion is what's allocated for health care. Discretionary. Let me point something out to you. Bearing in mind all of this money comes from the same pot, and that the U.S., I might add, is heavily engaged in borrowing money for war, essentially. And that's what's financing the Department of Defense. But let me point something out to you. We are going to be buying 28 OH-60 Black Hawk helicopters for $5 billion. Bearing in mind, again, that the monies that are going out for the VA. The VA is only spending $4 billion for pension benefits. $4 billion for pension benefits, $5 billion for 28 helicopters. Two Chinook helicopters at $1 billion. That $1 billion is all that's being asked to take care of homeless veterans.
Now, there's one thing I'd like to bring up here, because there's a lot of stories that have been out there. Thank God for Patricia Kimmy at the Army Times. She's been writing all this stuff to keep track. Thing we need to mention for everybody that's having a problem is the VFW, and Patricia wrote this story, has asked for veterans to call in to discuss the problems they've been seeing with the VA and wherever they are. And that number to call, and I've already called it and talked to them, and they're getting back to me, is 1-800-VFW-1899. So the VFW is trying to collect all the data by talking to vets and everybody that's had problems. Make sure you call 1-800-VFW-1899. And the person I talked to was real nice. We went through everything, what has happened, what's happened, what VA has been going on, what we problems we had. Do I know of any other ones? And just like gather the data, get the data together, and then we can force the VA and the president to take action. But you know, like everybody has said, and we've been saying, Denise, you've been saying this forever and ever and ever, long before I met you and started working with you, that they have to just acknowledge what has happened and assume responsibility without arguing and debating it anymore with the sick vets, because the records were destroyed and disappeared. The information confirming the toxic effects of all this stuff is out there. All of us have worked with it. Denise and Patricia, you wrote some of it, as did I, and yet they disavowed that it exists. You know, we got that physician's directives here for Vision 11. Patricia, you and I worked on that. You called all the way up to the Vision headquarters on that physician guidance, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
I did. And what happened there when you asked if they'd put it out to everybody?
Well, they had put it out 1 year, and they kept it out for a couple of years, as they defined Pershing Gulf War illness as an illness brought about as a consequence of all of the exposures that I had named in 1992, which was chemical warfare agents, depleted uranium, also called radioactive weaponry, oil fires, vaccinations,
medication,
everything that I had cited in 1992, and this particular VA cited all of that as contributory to Persian Gulf War illness. It was out there for 2 years, and then it was taken off.
Denise,
then they took it off.
Denise, in 1999, I distinctly remember you and I and Command Sergeant Major Frank Sauer were up at National Academy of Science Institute of Medicine right there in Washington, D.C., and Admiral Zuma got up there and did his song and dance and smoke everything, just getting blue smoke all over the place. But I distinctly remember at the end you outlined how to solve the problems completely, didn't you?
Yeah, I had 26 points to make, and I made them. But you know what it gets down to? Let me give you an example. We've had now two studies on hypercoagulation. Our initial one was a small sample size. It was picked up by our reviewer, which was Dr. Ron Bach. He did a study, and his study has been published. And my frustration is, yes, our research has helped us, Patricia, the fMRI-DT that Georgetown did. The problem is the VA won't do anything. They
well, that's my point,
up.
Yes.
They do not do a hypercoagulation test.
The reason why we keep this independent is so that the VA doesn't have control over the research.
Exactly. And you know,
this is Glenn. Hey, I want to say a couple things. Okay, first off, when we talk about how many people have died, how many Gulf Desert Storm veterans have died, I heard somebody say there were over 100,000. I've looked all over the place. I mean, I have no idea where I can find that data. Second of all, the other thing I want to talk about, I want to say, is if you look at all these wars we've been engaging in since the repeal of the draft, do you guys realize we have engaged in 134 different military, we've had 134 different military engagements. So in essence, we're being viewed, since we volunteered for it, as an expendable asset. If you get sick, you die off, not a problem. You volunteered for it.
That's right.
Glenn, what was your experience in the war, and then what's your experience been with the VA since?
My experience with, when it comes to my ailments, all my claims for the presumptives, IBS, mental cognitive dysfunction, fibromyalgia, CFS, I've submitted claims with the VA for those, and I did not say, oh, this, I am sick because of Gulf War illness. I submitted claims for the individual ailments. However, every single one of those have been denied. So in Washington, they will say, oh, we've added these presumptives to Gulf War illness. But at the local level, my own experience, and from talking from other veterans, that's not what they're doing. They're denying the claims.
Yeah, that's how they're getting rid of the backlog.
80% are denied. Veterans will usually give up or not put it back in.
Yeah, that's how they're getting rid of the backlog. Yeah, they're denying.
For Desert Storm veteran, if you say Gulf, I think I have Gulf War illness, I've got this symptom, that as soon as you mention Gulf War illness, you know, the claims process is really confusing because they want you to break it down as a chronic multi-symptom illness, either unknown or a partially known, I can't even say the word epithelial, but anyway, my point being, and it's so confusing for the veterans, but it's just another tool to delay or deny the claims, in my opinion.
I would agree with you.
The reason why they do that, right? You think about it. If we turn around, they say they're clearing up the backlog. The reason why they do that, they turn around, they deny the claim, right? It puts it in the appeal status. Being in an appeal status, that gives them the leisure of leaving it in there in appeals for years, decades. Hell, it could be for the next century. You know, chances are you'll be dead by the time they get to it, you know.
Exactly.
And that's what they're doing. They're saying, oh, we're cleaning the backlog up. No, they're not. They're just going around with the big old deny stamp tonight.
But, you know, you talk about the appointments and all that's going on now. I think they're going to find it's much widespreader than...
Oh, it is.
It is, absolutely.
I've got a
friend of mine, a Gulf War vet. He's 100%. He come real close to dying. Luckily, a good civilian doctor saved him. But he's been trying just to get his eyes checked for the last year or so. And, you know, like I said earlier, it gets to that appointment, and they're rescheduled, and then his records say he failed to show up for the appointment and blah, blah, blah. And it's just a fight to get an appointment. And I can tell you, in my case, because I was going in, I keep having these neurological events. I don't know what you call it, but weird sensations, and all of a sudden I can't walk for a few days. And my doctor says it's something that mimics MS, whatever that is. But so
has anybody noticed?
I go to my VA clinic, and they had looked at me and told me, we don't believe you.
Did they do an MRI or a CAT scan?
I finally got them to do that. Well, that's just the thing. When my doctor thought it was MS, this is 2009, he sent me for an MRI. It did not show the plaques or the lesions.
Did they do an MRI with contrast, Mike? Do you know?
That's what I'm saying. I go back to the VA a year later. Can you do another MRI just to make sure? And they did the MRI. They didn't find nothing wrong. That's when they wrote possible psychosomatic disorder in my record. Okay, so, you know, recently...
MRI would die, right?
Recently, this new doctor, she sent me for another MRI. They did not do it with contrast, but however, the apnea in my bifrontal lobes is so prominent they can see the neurodegenerative changes taking place on a regular
MRI. Even without the contrast, yeah.
Right.
Right.
So for me, it's...
Well, I tell you something. I've heard of them falsifying records. And
well,
if you haven't heard of that, let me tell you
that's
happening.
And I want to talk on that point. Okay, falsifying records, right? I'm going to tell you right now. My last CMP, when they deny my claims with the amount of evidence, because I was one of the slick ones. Before I got out of the military, you know, I had a full PGI exam done. They did the whole nine yards. Everything came back. They said, nothing's wrong with you. You're normal. However, I knew something was not right. And so I went ahead, before I got out of the military, I made copies of all my military records. You know, you're not supposed to do that. However, I made a detour by a copy machine and made a copy of all that stuff. Okay, mm-hmm. I submitted all those copies to include 485 PET scan images.
Mm-hmm.
I gave that to them also. So altogether, I gave the VA, with my claim, I gave them over 1,500 documentations.
Mm-hmm.
When I went in for my CMP, and after they denied it, I was so furious, I demanded a copy of my CMP. I finally got the copy back after it had been given, you know, I got the runaround. I got a copy. I dissected that thing. And I can tell you right now, it's up on my webpage. Of course, sensitive information has been cleared out. However, it is public, and I have highlighted on my CMP the numerous items that they missed, errors on there, and including lies, flat-out lies, by the doctor. Because the doctor in this statement said, has a bullet comment on this, says, well, Glenn Stewart said, no, that's not what I said. That is a 100% lie. They lied on my CMP, and I have a copy of that. And
yeah,
I have a witness.
Are you talking about falsifying the record?
Yeah, I see it. Let me tell you, I work with veterans every day, and I go through those records, and I'm telling you, I see it.
Unless you turn
the screen around and type, like I have done, they're going to type whatever they want to according to the VA's guidelines.
Could I finish what I'm saying?
Yeah, please.
In May 2012, I had one of those flare-ups. And, you know, it started at night, and the following morning I got up. I did not have an appointment with my local community-based clinic. But I drove up there that morning and I asked to be seen. And I'm thinking, because they didn't believe me, they could actually see me can't walk. And I got there, some other veterans in the clinic had to help me in. And even I didn't have the appointment, but they said, yeah, we'll look at you. And so when they called me to come back, other veterans helped me get up. And they carried me back, and the nurse was writing everything on a yellow sheet of paper. And she looks at me and says, your blood pressure is extremely high. You need to leave and go see a doctor.
Okay, hey, guys, we're running out of time here. The music's coming up. Let's continue this next week. I'd like everybody to come back again next week, same time, same place. Let's continue discussion. Invite other veterans to join us, and let's continue to try and have an open conversation. Thank you for everybody. Thank you very much. Gary, thank you very much. And my producer, thank you. And good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
God bless the veterans.
All right.
Yeah,
thank
you. Take care, everyone. Cheers.